And so I want to welcome anyone who has just joined us, may have joined us during the meditation. My name is Ramona Lisa Ortiz Smith, and I will be sharing this evening on grounding in the body. And pretty much exploring the first foundation of mindfulness, which is the body. And I'll read a little bit more. We've done some meditation. We may do a little bit, a touch of meditation at the end as well, and discussion. And so, what is mindfulness? What is mindfulness? I mean, when you really think about it, what is it? One of my teachers, Martin Alward, says mindfulness means giving close, curious, and caring attention to whatever arises. We are learning to meet life more deeply than we can imagine, to live more fully, more fluidly, and more freely. And with that same teacher, I was charged with coming up with a definition of my own. Martin Alward and Mark Coleman. And it was like, I'd been practicing for a number of years, and it was like, what is mindfulness? And I think the definition for me will change again over time, but what I settled on at that time, which was, maybe a year, 2 years ago now, was the intentional and intimate knowing of the nature of experience. And I invite you to explore what mindfulness is for yourselves. What, how do you know when you're mindful? How do you explain it? How do you, describe it? It's experiential to me, so that's one reason it was difficult to explain or define in some way. And I don't know, it was really challenging. I think about it more often. And so there are actually, first of all, let me check. I just realized since I'm the host. Do you all know how to set your view so that you could either be off screen or if you want to make me big or you want to do the gallery, are you okay with that or do I need to do the spotlighting thing? It's all good. Y'all are good with it. Yay. Okay, great. Because it's like I don't want to, then I have to figure out how to make myself small or disappear. So anyway, there are actually, according to the Buddhist teachings, four foundations of mindfulness. And so, in this book called the Satipatthana, the Direct Path to Realization, Anālio, Venerable Anālio, has really analyzed the four foundations of mindfulness. It's a really interesting and intellectual book. So, however, yeah, I keep going back over it and over and over it and gaining a new understanding with it. But first, he starts with kind of ways of understanding the term Satipatthana Sutta itself. And so Venerable Anālio defines it as a compound of the Pali word sati, which has been translated as mindfulness or awareness, and then another word, upatthana. And I am not a Pali linguist, so, I'm doing my best to honor and respect this language as I share it. And the upatthana means placing near or being present and attending to. So when you put those two together, over the years, I guess the people that translate and study the Pali language and translate it into English have come up with, satipatthana meaning mindfulness or being present and in attendance. He says, Let me see the part that's the right. So satipatthana can then be translated as presence or mindfulness or as attending with mindfulness. And so that when we break it down, that's all we're doing. But I don't know about you, it sounds simple, but it can be complicated to just be mindful of the breath or mindful of the body. Then there's thoughts going everywhere, you know? But that's basically what it means. And that's what the Satipatthana Sutta is. That's the lesson or the instructions that the Buddha gave on the foundations of mindfulness. And the foundations, the basics. This is all we need for the path to nibbana or path to liberation is these four foundations of mindfulness. And the Dhamma, the teachings of the Buddha, is vast, in my opinion. There's so much and so many details. And so I find relief knowing that, oh, I can focus on this one thing. And then not even just the four foundations of mindfulness. I can focus on one. And not even just one foundation, but one aspect of that one foundation. And so the four foundations, just to point to them, are the body. That's the first foundation. And then there's feelings. Not the emotional feelings, but feelings of how we experience this relative world. Whether we experience phenomena or experience sensations as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Or neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So it's kind of noticing, you know, was my, I'm breathing in and out, is that pleasant or unpleasant or neutral? And then the third foundation is the mind, and emotions rise there. We get to know the mind, how the mind works, you know, what's how understanding that these are human experiences that all of us have, right? And then the fourth foundation is the Dhammas, which is translated as mind states. And then that gets this is one that gets broken down to a million little things. But one example, in my opinion, a million may not be a million, but I can't remember the list. So I jotted down two just to give you an example of the Dhammas or mind states. One of them is the five hindrances. If you've been practicing and you've heard of hindrances or things that interfere with our meditation practice, and that would be something like restlessness or worry. Has anyone ever been challenged in their meditation practice by restlessness or worry? You could, you know, raise your hand, wave, or something. Okay. What about sloth and torpor when you're just like, you know, can't stay awake? Yeah. And then there's doubt. Oh, there's a hand. Is that a hand up for a question or is that a hand up for a participation?
Sorry, I was just participating.
Great, great. Thank you. That's cool. That's cool. You can use your Zoom hand. That's fine. Thank you. Doubt. Has anyone experienced doubt in their meditation? Yeah, that happens to me a lot. That's a big hindrance for me, you know, especially when I trip out and go, "Is this really working?" You know, the four foundations. You know, and then there's craving and clinging. How many of you have cravings or clinging? I know sometimes when I sit, you know, yes, crave, cling, I sit. I finally get down and sit in my practice, you know, using sit as a, you know, metaphor, but I get into my stillness practice and then I want to get up and move. And then I get up and move and I want to sit down and sit. And it's like, oh my goodness, craving, my mind just goes back and forth, you know, or clinging, wanting that practice to go on forever. Dang, why'd the bell ring? You know, and then there's aversion. Have you had any aversion to your practice or aversion arise while you're practicing? Like you finally got the breath and then you get this itch. You know, you don't want the breath. Or you hear sounds and you're focusing on the breath, and sounds sound like noise when you want to focus on the breath, you know, and you're averse to the sounds. So those are the five hindrances. So that falls under dhammas or mind states, just to give you an idea. And the six senses also falls on the dhammas, the mind states, when we start, when we work with learning how we receive and process information as a human being, you know, through our eyes, ears, nose, mouth. So four foundations: the body, feelings in terms of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experience, the mind, emotions, or just knowing the mind is mind and how it works, and then the dhammas, mind states. But we're focusing today, or I'm focusing on sharing the body. And within the body, there are so many aspects to the practice. Oh, I forgot to set my timer. Let me set my timer. Excuse me for 1 second, because I get excited and I like to keep on talking. Okay. All right, thank you. If you hear some crickets in the background, that's my timer going off telling me it's time to pay attention to where I'm at. Within the body, there are many aspects within the body that we can practice, and the Buddha gave us instructions for that as well. And when I share the Dharma, I like to share, what's up for me, or either if somebody asks me to share a certain theme and I feel like I have something to say about it, then I can offer that. But the body for me is really helpful in grounding. When I find myself stressed or super busy, wound up, or any of those hindrances, restlessness, worry, I can get still. Or sometimes I'm thinking of all these different meditation techniques in my head. I'm like, oh my gosh, should I follow the breath? Should I do metta? Should I do this? Should I do that? Maybe I should walk through the. It's like, you girls, you need to just be still and just ground in the body. Just feel your feet on the ground. Feel your bottom in the seat. Feel your back against the chair. Just sit and know you're sitting, like the sutta says. And that can, for me, my experience, that I can feel a, what do you call it, a transformation in the way that I'm operating in my life in that moment when I stop. So sometimes I use that throughout the day where if I find myself spinning around, what do I do? Oh, should I do this? I start to do this task and I realize I left that one undone. Then I just stop and ground in the body. It's something that you can do when you're in line, when you're at a stoplight. You want to keep your eyes open, people. Please, when the light turns green, I want you to go. But you can be at the stoplight and just feel your body sitting in the car, right? So within the body, though, there are other things that we can practice. We can focus with mindfulness of breathing falls under the first foundation of mindfulness of the body. So we added that today, and we explored following the breath, and we explored sitting or being still in embodied stillness, because everyone doesn't sit in the in a certain way, but being embodied stillness. The four postures that the Buddha offers can also be found in the first foundation of mindfulness. That's when the Buddha shares with us that there are four postures: sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. And I like to add, and everything in between, because all of our bodies are different. I know that I can't sit on a cushion for a long term anymore. I sit in a chair. There's no hierarchy. And I really think, since this was part of the foundation of mindfulness, my interpretation or my understanding is that whatever position my body is in when I'm practicing, and I think about sometimes when my back is out or I'm sick and I can't get into a, I can't even be able to sit in a chair, that whatever position I can get into, as long as I'm aware and mindful of my body, I can practice. This is what we have, people. The Buddha even said that everything we need is in this fathom-long body to awaken. And so, full awareness is also part of the practice in the four foundations of mindfulness, and that has to do with being mindful of everything we do. Washing the dishes, lifting your hands, whatever we do. And the elements, earth, wind, fire, and water. We can practice paying attention to the elements in our body as well. And then the final part of practicing the body is has to do with a teaching based on going to the charnel grounds and paying attention and observing the decay of a human body, to begin to recognize its impermanence, or to see the body when you're practicing not self, to see the body as its bodily parts, knowing that this body is a body and that we also should not be attached to it. So again, reading from the Middling Discourses of the Buddha, translated by Bhikkhu Nanamoli and Bhikkhu Bodhi. That's where I'll be reading from. I'll just call it the Majjhima Nikaya. in terms of the four postures, the Buddha says, or it's been translated as him saying, again, practitioners, and remember I'm substituting bhikkhus for practitioners. When walking, a bhikkhu understands I am Again, practitioners, when walking, a practitioner understands I am walking. When standing, one understands I am standing. When sitting, one understands I am sitting. When lying down, one understands I am lying down. Or one understands accordingly, however one's body is disposed. And so that right there lets me know that being mindful of whatever position your body is in between those four postures. And in terms of full awareness, our body is with us, and so the practice can be with us at all times. We are with this body until we die. That we know that much. Whatever happens after, you know, there's a whole lot to contemplate about that. And we will all find out what that is one day. But until then, full awareness in this body while we have it, it's always with us, which means we always have access to the practice. Just notice that the Buddha doesn't say you need a cushion and a Buddha statue and incense and a bell. You don't need all that. You have everything you need, the wisdom internally to awaken. It's right here. And so he says again, practitioners, a practitioner is one who acts in full awareness when going forward and returning, who acts in full awareness when looking ahead and looking away, who acts in full awareness when flexing and extending their limbs, who acts in full awareness when wearing their robes and carrying their outer robe and bowl, who acts in full awareness when eating, drinking, consuming food, and tasting, who acts in full awareness when defecating and urinating, who acts in full awareness when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. Just points out that we are invited to practice mindfulness in everything we do. And so there are many opportunities in our everyday lives to do so. When we're washing dishes, if we wash dishes, if we're loading a dishwasher, when we're cleaning, doing laundry, folding clothes, cooking, eating, brushing our teeth, and doing our personal business in the bathroom, we need to be mindful, or we have the opportunity to be mindful all the time as part of our practice. And yes, I spoke last week on Kalyanamitta and Sangha community and the importance of spiritual friendship, and that is one of the three jewels of the Dharma. And so that too is important. And so I think the Buddha Dharma is all about finding the middle way. So we need that community, but we also have an individual practice that we can do within our community. The benefits that I find with the mindfulness of body practice, one of the benefits I've found is that there was a period in my life where I felt like I was just living in my head. I was a dancer for years. I danced for over 35 years, professional for about 10 or 15 years, and teaching some of them. So I lived in my body for much of my life. But then at one point, I began to live my whole life in my head from here up. It just felt like this is where life was. Thinking, planning, raising a child, going to school, adulting, basically, like they said. And the rest of my body was there, but I really wasn't aware of it until it got sick or it got hurt or it was tired. But I was living my life here. So with these practices, the mindfulness of the body, again, back to whole body sitting, whole body standing, whole body lying down, whole body walking, supported me in reconnecting with the rest of my body as I lived my life. And then this full awareness practice, when you become aware of how you're walking, how you're doing everyday tasks in life, again, I could come out of my head and realize that I could connect to my whole body and then ultimately connect to the earth and then ultimately ground and then ultimately relax. Yes, maybe I'll be enlightened one day, but relaxing and having a little clarity on living this life with ease is good enough for me right now. I'm happy with that. So, and a lot of us spend our lives in our head. I mean, and especially with technology, looking at the computers, on all of the social media, where, you know, we're not even hardly using our voices, right? Because you could text and you could type and you're doing this. You know, so to re-engage and connect with the body can be, it's something that I find beneficial. It supports me in living fully and more expansive. And also, we can explore and develop insight with all of the mindfulness practices that are available to us that I went over already. You know, if you have an opportunity, you could practice that around your house. Like if you, for example, if you're finding that it's difficult for you to find a time to do a stillness practice, to set aside time, you're too busy, you can be mindful even setting up your computer for your next meeting, for example, right? So we can... The body, there's so much there for us. And then if you have an opportunity to practice for a half of a day with a sangha or a full day or do a retreat, you'll have plenty of time to practice mindfulness and help the mind and body settle so that we can see what's really up internally for ourselves and our lives and what's important to us. Or just notice, you know, have time for some of those important thoughts. Because we know the thoughts don't stop, but I have experienced when the thoughts will kind of settle and I begin to know whether I should be paying attention to certain thoughts or not. Are certain thoughts important or not? So it's not that you stop thinking, but which ones are habitual? Which ones are the stories? Which ones are, am I way in the past? Just, you know, just back there for no benefit or leaning way into the future, worrying about something, you know? So you can develop insight just by practicing mindfulness of the body. Also, I feel that, well, I know there was times, especially since I was a dancer, my relationship with my body has changed over time. And a lot can come up with that. So it brings me back to when I was talking about it's not always comfortable for everyone to pay attention to their body. We get so many messages in this society about our bodies, which ones are accepted for so many reasons. And so it can be hard to actually have to accept your body for whatever reason, whatever that represents. And so it's a way for us to begin to maybe cultivate a loving relationship with the body just as it is. That's when the loving kindness practice and the compassion practice can come into play. We begin to care for our bodies just as they are. We begin to understand where the aversion to our bodies comes from. Or we begin to see the aversion as understanding that the body is, you know, is a body with blood and skin and hair and smells. And we also begin to understand how our body experiences life through the six sense doors. You know, things overlap. You know, the senses come up in another place as well. And so basically we can work with our attitude and relationship with our bodies. You know, begin to understand it's impermanent, that we need not be attached to it. It's ever changing. It gets sick, it gets old, it dies. You know, beginning to understand the truths of this body. It also supports us. It for some of us, we're able to do certain things with our bodies. For some of us, we have things that we're not able to do with our bodies. And so we come to a place of acceptance that we can still ground and gain insight from our bodies, no matter what state it's in. You know, we begin to understand things like pain, sickness. And then we can begin to cultivate a sense of gratitude for when our bodies are well, when they are functioning, when they are responding, even if it's different than it was before. Like this morning when I woke up, oh my goodness, I woke up to fresh, cool, clean air coming through my bedroom window. It was so delicious. And then knowing that there's fires burning all over the world, not just in California, but all over the world, I was like, ah, this air tastes so good that I had to get up and go gratefully sit on my porch and have my coffee in the cool, fresh air right in my pajamas because I didn't want to miss that. So talk about, you know, full body breathing, full body exhaling. Then noticing the warm sun on my face, knowing that, okay, I don't have on any sunscreen, so I better not be out here too long. But to just enjoy some of that, to experience the body, that pleasure of fresh air and warm sun, because we know that can change in a flash. And ultimately, you know, back to the body practice as being a way to cultivate groundedness and awareness. That's really what works, where I've leaned into it as of late for myself. And you have to decide, you know, for yourself, you have the wisdom to know which practice is the practice that you need. And that's part of being intuitive and having the insight of, you know, is the breath practice for me right now? Is the body practice? Is sitting practice for me? Is walking for me? You know, what do I need? Should I follow the breath? Not if you're suffering from a cold or, you know, something worse, like COVID, right? Maybe you need to focus on something else. But it's there, just knowing it's there. And, you know, when things get difficult, we get to see and pay attention to, oh, the breath changes. Oh, the breath is fragile, delicate, vital. But the groundedness, it's earth, talking about the elements that are in our body. We are the earth, right? The elements within our bodies. But I like to use, sometimes I even practice with a stone, with a rock, any kind of rock, and holding it when I'm feeling really ungrounded. And I hold it and it helps to settle me, to really help me know that I'm connecting to the earth and that I can be supported by the earth and nourished by the earth. And held, and just let go. I think, you know, that's pretty much all I have to say about the first foundation of mindfulness. Just that it's rich, and that one aspect, that one aspect of the foundation of mindfulness, the body, that is enough to work with. Just knowing that there's a body. And as I read during the meditation, I thought I would read again, about the mindfulness of, let me see. Actually, I want to share this. Well, no, I'm going to stick to I Okay, I'll read this part. Basically, that the four foundations of mindfulness, again, back to the Satipatthana Sutta, what the Buddha said about the four foundations of mindfulness, he was explaining that this is the direct path to realization. So this is the language that has been translated that the Buddha apparently said 2,600 years ago. Whatever was lost in translation is still pretty amazing to me. Again, substituting words. Practitioners, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of the nibbana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. That's all we need for liberation. And what are the four? Here, practitioners, a practitioner abides contemplating the body as body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. One abides contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. One abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. One abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world. So there it is, the four foundations of mindfulness. And one, the body, the first one, in my opinion, is so rich. And so, I'll just leave it at rich. And there's a lot to learn there. A lot, in my opinion. Thank you for listening. I'm looking forward to talking about this now with you. All right, so reflections, thoughts, disagreements, it's all good as long as we're respectful and talk from our own experiences. Please bring it forward to the community. We can learn from each other, from our Sangha, from the wisdom in the room, and share. I still don't want to call on people, James. No one has anything to say?
I have a question.
Okay.
You focus tonight on the body, and I get that to some degree. It's one of the other four that I'm sort of struggling with. And I would expect that they're all connected. They all relate to each other, but mind objects.
Yeah.
Do you have an explanation for mind objects?
I was like, so this is questions and response. I may not have the answer, Albert, but, you know, I guess my best explanation, I don't know if you were, I'm going to use the ones that I pulled here first, because it's taken me a long time to even begin to understand mind objects, the Dhammas. And so, okay, actually, this is where I can, give me a moment. Okay, so mind objects, like when I was thinking about working with the hindrances, there are things that our mind has us captured in my opinion. That may not be a good word. There, let me do this. The body, so we know the body is the body, right? We're contemplating the body, being aware of the body. We can focus on the breath. We can focus on even the physical aspects of the body. Check, right? And there's more to that, bringing mindful attention to that. Then the second one is feeling tones, right? And it's about experiencing the world, like whether we're having a pleasant or unpleasant experience or a neutral experience with how things are or with sound or something like that. And then the third one is emotions, mostly more about emotional states, like working with grief and this and that. And you can kind of see, and just understanding that the mind is a mind. The objects are actually, how would I explain it? Almost like, would I explain it as external phenomena? Things that we get hooked on. For example, the hindrances of doubt, restlessness, sloth and torpor. It's neither one of the other things. I don't know if I have a clear answer. I'm still trying to understand it fully myself. There are, in mind objects, there are, it's more, what do you call it when it's more thinking?
Is it more intangible or more?
Maybe that's the word. Does anyone else have a explanation?
Are you looking for the word cerebral?
Maybe cerebral. But then there's another one. There's another word that I'm searching for. When it's kind of out there. Like, for example, that one of the things under the Dhammas as a mind object is the five aggregates. And so we get into, maybe, is it more philosophical or more?
Okay.
What's that word? Because with the, like, for example, with the five aggregates, that's when we start to look at what makes up this thing we call a self. And we start to look at things like consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. You look at consciousness, you look at form, origin, you know, it gets really deep is the word that I would use, mm-hmm. You know, but also the six senses are there. Right? The way we receive information, the ears, eyes, nose, and mouth. So the seven enlightenment factors are there. The four noble truths fall under the mind object. So that's something that we contemplate intellectually, right? With the four noble truths, it's like that's the Buddha's teaching of there is suffering. These are the causes. This is how you let it go. And this is the way. So yeah, that's the best I can do, Albert, at this point.
Thank you.
I don't know if that was helpful or more confusing, but I'm still beginning to understand. I'm still learning about that one.
Yes, thanks.
Yeah. Well, did you get it? I'm curious, though. How did that land? Are you still confused? Or maybe that wasn't your word.
Yeah, it's not. It's I don't understand it enough to be confused.
Did I confuse you more?
No. It's really just getting what falls in that area. I understand the body and sitting. You sit. You start with your body. You get in to being aware of your body, how you're sitting, the pain, the itches, the things that come up in the body. So that's clear. You know, feelings, that's clear. And the question of what is the container? So the container, it sounds like the container of mind objects is rather vast. There's a lot in there. So
I mean, maybe it's like everything else.
Ah, okay. That's a good way of looking at it.
I don't know, but that's where, you know, and yeah, I know
that works for me. At this point.
Okay. And I'm still working it out. So that I don't have a, can't explain it any. Okay. Yeah. So there's a lesson, a learning for me, you know. Thank you for asking. Anyone else? And that's why we call it questions and responses.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm interested if in your reading, there was anything, any teaching about why the body is first. Are they sequential? And is, you know, is there something that we're supposed to get out of it being first?
Well, I'm not sure why the body is first, you know? I mean, when I think of it from, if I answer it from a practitioner's place, is because, you know, the Buddha had a way of offering teachings to people in the way that met their intellect or met their understanding or met their, whatever it is, their spiritual ability to digest the teachings. Like that was one of his skills. And then also with the tradition being an oral tradition, things were listed for as a way of being able to remember them easily. But for the four foundation of mindfulness, I'm not sure. I couldn't answer that question exactly. And back to as a practitioner over the years, what I've gathered is that the body is for me, physical and accessible. And so to me, if I can connect with the body, it's like, I mean, my gosh, thank goodness the Dhammas are, if it is sequential, thank goodness the mind objects are the fourth one. Because that's complicated to me. So I would think for me, it has to do with simplicity and being able to understand basic connections to mindfulness, that we, that it can be as simple as being aware, and that we don't even need to, you know, really understand all of that to practice and understand what mindfulness is and to develop mindfulness, you know? So I would think it has to do with accessibility, but that's just
that makes a lot of sense.
Opinion. Yeah.
Thank you.
And that's where I go, because especially when I'm out there and all the thoughts and everything are happening, that's exactly where I go back to the body. It's like, boom, grounding, first foundation, boom. You know, but yeah, we'd have to ask a scholar for that one.
No, I think you did pretty well. Thank you.
You're welcome. This is neat. I love talking about the Dharma. Just to philosophize, you know? To think about, huh, well, why did he say that? You know, then that's when I start tripping out and trying to figure it out and can't find it. And the beauty about it is that we don't have to know. There weren't any books. The Buddha gave lessons specifically to specific people in specific situations at specific times. And I have to come back to that because I want to know it all. Because it's so rich. But I have to remind myself that I don't need to know it all to benefit from it. You know? Like, yeah. So, but I love talking about it and trying to understand it. I still go back to even contemplating suffering and the end of suffering. You know, my latest thing on that has been, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little off track, but my latest thing with that has been like, is there something like ultimate and relative suffering? Because can suffering really come to a complete end? So I really start to question it. But that's what the Dharma is about. We're instructed or we're invited to see for ourselves. And I really think because it's experiential, the Buddha got his enlightenment from sitting still in silence, watching his mind and the mind states in the body. And then he said that we all have that ability. And so it's not, you know, he didn't even write it in books. So it's not, we don't have to get it out of the books. We get it from experiencing this life. We get it from the teachings, but it's not the kind of thing we can go check off of a book. That's not how it was meant to be practiced. It was meant to be embodied, intellectualized, understood on a deep level. And there might be things that you, in your practice, that you get, and you might not be able to explain it, but you got it. And when you hear it, you know that was it. At least that's been my experience, you know. And it was only later, years later, that, and we all learn differently, right? But it was only years later that I really started to get into reading, because it was too much for me. It was overwhelming. You know, it was beautiful. I wanted it all. I was greedy about it. I wanted to suck it all up. I went, what book do I read? What chapter? What this? What teacher? And then it was like, okay, wait. It's so vast. And a teacher said, you know, just practice and trust. And when trust that you'll get what you need to get and you'll remember what you need to remember. And then that way, I feel like the practices, I began to, for my own self, embody some of the practices or feel, you know, begin to feel myself working with them. You know, not that I'm not saying I got things right, you know, whatever that is, right or wrong, but I began to experience the practices in my life and be like, oh, you keep doing that. It's leading to more suffering. There you go again, leading to more suffering. There you go again, leading to more suffering. You know? And then it's like, then one day it's like, oh, wait, pause, respond. I don't have to follow that. That's the habitual mind. Whoa, look at that. I'm not eating a third bowl of popcorn. Because it's going to lead to more suffering. I get sick. You know, and it can be simple, as simple as that, or something more complex and more important. But that's important, health. You know, I wasn't mindful eating the first two bowls of popcorn. So I wanted to finally taste it with the third bowl, but I was already full. That's mindfulness. It's like mindfulness was not present in the body. You know, I was, you know, so that, I mean, it's that simple at times. And then imagine when I catch myself on things that are more, have a different or greater impact on my life. Can I pause and think about it and see myself reacting out of habitual response, reacting out of greed? Because that was greed and mindlessness, right? Really, I do the two bowls of popcorn, which is still too much. I added a third one for effect. You know? Recently, I switched. My daughter and I have these special bowls that we use. We've used them for years. They weren't really special. I got them from like CVS or something, but they became our popcorn bowls. And I always had the big one and she had the small one. And so finally, she's 27. We've probably had the bowls since she was about 5. She's 27, or well, I guess when she turned 20, before just, she just turned 27. I finally said, maybe mommy should use a small bowl. You know, takes time. Oh, something's in the chat. See, I'm sorry. I missed it. Oh. Yes. No problem. Oh, somebody's asking about Donna again. Thank you. I'll put that back in the, I'll put my Venmo information and stuff back in the chat. Any more comments or, you know, how was the meditation and then doing that and then hearing some more of the readings from the suttas? How did that impact your reflection? Anyone want to share that? Zoom. Helen, are you going to speak? Whoops, I'll put that on mute. Anyone want to talk about the meditation practice and then, you know, how that went? Practicing with the body and the breath? Do you have a question, James? Are you raising your hand, James? Are you putting it on your... Oh, sorry. Hold on. I gotta unmute you. Try it. Hi. I can't hear you, James, if you're trying to talk.
Oh.
Oh, there you go.
Hello. Oh, there's just a lot going on. That was an excellent meditation. I tend to kind of let it flow like the clouds just going by. We had an interesting conversation, and we got a lot of stuff. Bam, 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 bam. And I thought, well, you know, if someone doesn't understand it, what would I do? I would say, well, how did you feel? You got to flip it over, you know, flip it over. Well, you know, I don't understand emotions. Well, you know, what was it like to feel? And when you felt this, what was that like? It's kind of like that, you know, to kind of bring it back to them a little iutic again.
Thank you. Yes. That was a good one. That would have been a great response for me for the Dhammas. Well, what do you think the Dhammas are, Albert? I'm coming back to you. How do you understand the Dhammas?
Exactly.
The mind states.
Yeah. What's going on for you?
Yeah. Oh, I asked them. I'm sorry, James. Can I pause you and ask them that question, or do you have more to say?
No, I'm done. I'm just listening.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, Albert, how do you understand the Dhammas?
Oh, do you mean the mind state?
The mind states, yeah. They're called the Pali word is the Dhammas.
Well, again, for me, I've been meditating for a while. I've just begun to really study the, a lot of the specific teachings of the Buddha and about the structure and the hierarchy and all of those details are something that I'm just really introducing myself to. And I had to say, one of the ways that I feel about it is I should just sit. I mean, sometimes I feel like it's more stuff. And I tend to be in my head, and I think it's important to me at times not to have so much information. So it's something that I'm working with. So I don't know all of the, you know, all the four this and the three that's and the, so I'm just getting familiar with that. And there are times when I'm listening to teachings, I sometimes feel, okay, maybe I should just sit with it. It seems like I get the most from sitting. And I, at this point, I'm trying to see if understanding the structure of things adds to what I'm experiencing. And frankly, at this point, it seems to sort of conceptualize what's happening more than anything. So I'm in this state of exploring, and
that's the best part. Explore.
Yeah.
Go for a walk with it. You know, if it doesn't make any sense, get out there and breathe. You see the clouds, you see people walking by, you know, or maybe you hear cars. So, but to just be in the moment rather than conceptualization. Because that's just going to, Terry, you just mess, it's just confusing for all of us.
I agree with that. And, you know, for me, like I was saying, I thank you for sharing again and letting me revisit that question, Albert. And James, thank you for, you know, supporting me with the reframing it that way, because it's so interesting to hear other people's experiences, you know. And for me, that's what I did. I let it go. You know, and just allowed myself to listen and to feel what I was feeling and to be guided by the teachers that were teaching, to trust in the teachings of the Dhamma, you know. And over time that strengthened for me too, to trust the Dhamma, to trust the teachings, you know, and to experience them, you know. And for me, what worked was, or I can't say what worked because I didn't know what other way to do it. I just jumped right into doing retreats, you know, at least once a year. And that was like enough for me. And then eventually I wanted to go back. Eventually, years later, I was like, okay, so what are the four truths? You know, and then reading them and then kind of hearing teachers talk about it. Like, even now I'll go, like, I'll probably go listen to some, I'll probably start looking for some Dharma talks around the Dhammas, even though lately my thing has been the eight path factors, the eightfold path. It's like trying to, I want to touch more into those. It's like, I know the eightfold path is the way, but I've got the mental capacity after practicing for a while to be like, oh, okay, I think I could digest a deeper understanding. So I've been looking for talks on the eight path factors, you know. And I would do the same with the Dhammas, but, you know, I'm satisfied with my vague understanding of the mind objects. You know, I get it in my head. Now I know I need to, I didn't teach that one today. You know, but I think that we have to work with it in the way that we learn best, you know, and the experiential is where I even enables me to share. Like, the only reason I was able to read these things tonight is not because I went and luck and dug out these books. It's because of my, I want to share my experience from my heartfelt experience. And then I am interested in the suttas now. And so for me, I've read these a few times, these particular ones, and I'm beginning in my, 15th or 16th year, beginning to understand how these suttas are relating and integrating in my practice. And so I feel comfortable because I have personally sat down and read them, looked up the words, translated words with different meanings for myself to try to get my own understanding of them. You know what I mean? So I felt comfortable enough sharing from those, from the readings I chose. Because these books are thick. They're thick. And I just thought I'd share that, you know. But it really comes from my practice, my heartfelt experience and understanding, and hopefully I could explain or share in a way that's beneficial to you all. And I just realized I'm over time. So I want to thank everyone for coming, but I'd like to just for 30 seconds, I'm not going to really count 30 seconds, to just settle and let me offer the merit if you're able to stay. Thank you for your practice tonight. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. May all beings be safe, happy, and free. May all beings live with vitality, peace, and ease. May all beings live with kind, open, loving, wise, generous, compassionate, joyous, and equanimous hearts. And may the merits of our practice be of benefit to all beings everywhere, excluding none, including ourselves. Thank you. Apologize for going over.
Gate gate paragate parasangate bodhisvaha or stop.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everyone. I appreciate you being here and practicing with me. Take good care.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.